The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
This morning, I will share the Dharma talk with David Roshi. I'll begin and David will pick it up, eventually leading us into Dharma dialogue. Tomorrow, the Taisho will be given by Melissa, so you will hear from all three of us. And our text for our Taishos is a koan, this version of which is collected in the modern collection, The Hidden Lamp, although it's an 8th century story. And the editors of The Hidden Lamp call it Ling Zhao Shining Grasses. Layman Pang was sitting in his thatched cottage one day, studying the sutras. "Difficult, difficult, difficult," he suddenly exclaimed, like trying to store 10 bushels of sesame seed in the top of a tree. "Easy, easy, easy," his wife Layman Pang answered. "It's like touching your feet to the floor when you get out of bed." "Neither difficult nor easy," said their daughter Ling Zhao. "It's like the teachings of the ancestors shining on the 100 grass tips." So you probably noticed immediately some ways that this koan is unusual. First of all, it does not concern, as most of our koans do, monks, priests, abbots, but rather three lay practitioners. And just in case we didn't notice, two of them are named Layman Pang and Laywoman Pang. So apparently we're supposed to appreciate this fact. And second thing to notice is that that I'm sure you did notice is that the koan is not set in a temple or in a monastic setting or a hermitage or on the way between one monastery and another, but in a home, a thatched cottage. And a third thing that stands out is that this isn't in the form, as a number of koans are, of a kind of Dharma combat going back and forth between two usually male figures, but this is more like a Dharma dialogue within a family. And so these features that may mark this as different from many koans we encounter all might relate especially to our practice. Many of us are lay practitioners, and even those of us who are ordained priests may have day jobs, partners, families. And so the Pang family of lay practitioners speaks to our own version of non-monastic practice. Most of us live in private homes or apartments or condos, not in monastic situations. And many of us have families, whether or not we're able to share our Zen practice with them. So who were these people? What do we know about this family? Like everyone else from the 8th century, the Pang family is partly legendary, and there are different versions of the stories that have come down to us. But in all of the versions of all of the stories I know, Layman Pang is known as an unusually dedicated Zen practitioner, Chan practitioner in the China of the 8th century. Known for not only his dedication, but his deep understanding and his great realization of the Dharma. And a lot of stories about Layman Pang have him speaking to abbots or other ordained Zen teachers, and they do engage in kind of Dharma combat. And Layman Pang frequently comes out holding his own, if not maybe a little ahead. And in this way, he may have reminded readers in China of Vimalakirti, who in the Mahayana tradition is the great lay practitioner of the Indian tradition of the Buddhist time, and who bests all the bodhisattvas and key adherents of the Buddha in the Vimalakirti Sutra. Layman Pang, though, mostly spent his time with his family in that thatched cottage. And he shared the Dharma with his wife and daughter. He also had a son who we really don't hear very much about. But his wife, Laywoman Pang, was known for her own keen understanding and great practice. And their daughter, Ling Zhao, just the same. Her name means radiant spirit. And she definitely comes off as an unusually incisive and spiritually adept person in the koans in which she figures. So you may know a lot about Layman Pang, or maybe this is the first time you've heard about Layman Pang, but if it's the first time, you may already know one line that is attributed to him from the 8th century. And this is the concluding line of a poem that he wrote. And the concluding line that you may have heard about because it's alluded all the time in the Zen literature is fetching water and gathering firewood. This is sometimes used as a way to talk about our practice. So the poem in question, which is six lines, was either, depending on which story you like, either his response to the great 8th century Zen master Shito, who asked him what he'd been up to, or maybe it was his response to someone unnamed who's asked him, well, given your intensive meditation practice and your deep realization, you must have developed some miraculous powers. And so either way, it works for me. Here's what Layman Pang said in this spontaneous poem. My daily activities are not unusual. I just remain in spontaneous harmony, not grasping or rejecting. In every place, there's no hindrance, no conflict. My supernatural power and marvelous activity, fetching water and carrying firewood. Layman Pang had studied some with two different great masters of the 8th century, in that he lived into the early 9th century, and these were really wonderful times for Chan, for Zen in China. A lot of our koans concerned teachers from that era. And one of them, I already mentioned, Shito, who Layman Pang may have been answering with this poem. Shito's line eventually led to Zaodong Zen in China, Soto Zen in Japan, which is still one of the two major remaining schools of Zen. And then Layman Pang went on to sit some with Matsu. And Matsu's line led to Linji and Linji Chan in China, and then Rinzai Zen in Japan, which is the second school. And apparently all living Zen teachers, transmitted teachers, traced their lineage back to either Shito or Matsu. And so there was Layman Pang right at the source, studying with both and being acknowledged by both. And Matsu acknowledged his enlightenment, his awakening. But Layman Pang does not carry himself like someone who considers himself special. My daily activities are not unusual. My supernatural power and marvelous activity, fetching water and carrying firewood. This is particularly striking, not just as an example, and there are others, of course, of how physical labor, manual labor, was valued really from the beginning in Chan, in Chinese Zen, and continues to be. We still do our samu, our work practice at Sushin to this day. Most every Zen group does. But for the kinds of labor that he's talking about, Of course, in pre-modern China, fetching the water and gathering the firewood were extremely important tasks. No plumbing, so someone had to go out early each morning and get a bucket or two of water. No central heating, so in all of the colder months, someone had to go out and gather wood to keep the fire going. Water and fire, necessary to living. But these were often the tasks of not of the father of the family in what was clearly an extremely patriarchal society. The father of the family generally would not be bothered with getting water and gathering firewood. But this would be a duty that devolved to the wife of the family, or if the kids were old enough, to an older child. And so remarkable to me that Layman Pang takes this on himself and advertises it. You know, what is the most miraculous thing I do in a day? It's going out to get the water. It's going into the local woods to find sticks, something for us to burn to keep the fire going throughout the day. Unusually egalitarian family, according to this poem. And according to the koan as well. I love this koan because each member of the family speaks just once, and each one is treated equally. Each one is given an equal voice in this family Dharma dialogue. We might read it and feel that we're being asked to see this as a kind of contest and choose a winner, and that might be a way to understand the koan. My way this morning is to see them all as equal partners in this family Dharma activity. And each of one of them utters something that we can learn from, that we can profit from. Is our practice really, really difficult? Or is it just something that's easy and that comes naturally? Or is it neither difficult nor easy? Should we think of it still another way? And so I will leave it to David Roshi to tell you.
Difficult, easy, grass tips. What is it we're doing here? This great Zen tradition we are all the inheritors of, these wondrous stories, these fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, just like you and me. This wonderful, the Pang family, kind of like the Simpsons of Zen, delving into the true way. And while I have great appreciation for the institutions of Zen, the temples and the monasteries, the sanghas of human beings that have come together, the true way of Zen is not contained or owned or limited. The true way of Zen is not the way of some other person. It is not the way of doctrine or making sure you know the 10 thises and the 17 thats. But this true way is the way that emerges moment after moment. And this true way requires of each of us so much. There is the momentum of life, the momentum of our karma, the momentum of each day. We wake up and we begin our day, whatever the shape of our day, in this difficult, like trying to keep sesame seeds on the top of a tree, bushels of sesame seeds on one seed on each leaf. How could you do this? The mother says, no, it's like putting your feet on the floor in the morning. Now we might think putting your feet on the floor in the morning is no big deal, but actually to the contrary, all of us, I think, have had mornings and maybe many mornings where putting our feet on the floor was not going to happen. And there will be times for all of us when even the most basic things, washing the dishes. I loved Alan's instruction for Samu, maybe doing something in your house even though it isn't your turn. Usually we keep score of who's doing the chores, who got the groceries last time, who does this. But this kind of generosity and appreciation that calls to us, and this work of Zen, this work of coming on Sesshin, is partly about interrupting the mindless forward momentum of our lives. Each one of us born into a particular family at a particular time in a particular country, the society we grow up in has taught us many things, most of them not quite true, or worse than that, some of them these pernicious ideas we have of value, somehow equating value with accumulation. And associating accomplishment with a good life, maybe. There is this momentum of being a good person. I'll be a good boy. I'll be a good girl. I'll be a good little one and just do what I'm told. If you just do what you're told and be who you think you should be, you miss the path by a mile. This path of waking up, easy and difficult, and beyond easy and difficult, requires this intention, this arousing of the bodhicitta, arousing of the way-seeking mind. And this intention to wake up comes, the seeds of this intention to wake up are the seeds of greed, anger, and ignorance. I hope in your life you have encountered your own greed, and your own anger and your own ignorance, because only when we begin to see how far we have drifted, when we have begun to see that the paths of pleasing the people outside of us, or even pleasing ourselves, come to an end. Success and achievement are quite empty. Accumulation is empty. Even achieving special mind states has no power. The power is this possibility of being present in this moment. the possibility of breathing in and breathing out, this wondrous functioning, this marvelous functioning that Layman Pong sings of, chopping wood and carrying water, shoveling snow and washing dishes, just the basics. Moving into a life beyond accomplishment, a life beyond struggle, but a life that includes all of these. Nothing is left out. So when you are struggling in your practice, when you are confused and wondering what you are doing, this is the true way. This is the true way of struggle and difficulty. And it is a privilege to struggle. It is a privilege to be in a difficult situation, because this difficult situation allows us to touch something that is true. The difficult situation of being born human forces us, demands, if we take it seriously, the brevity and the preciousness of this life, if we take it seriously, we get kind of urgent about this. How can this be? This world of coming and going, this world of struggle and pain. How can I find my way? Who am I? What is this? It is a matter of great importance. And also arising are the moments of ease. And maybe these moments of ease are just a part of a second. We all may have images of other people living in some kind of ease that we don't have. Well, I worry all the time. I wish I could be like fill in the blank. I'm sure she, he, they don't worry like I do. These moments of appreciation, these moments of encountering the world in the brightness of the sun as it shines higher in the sky each day, the rain and snow, the wind, all of these are blessings. And these moments of ease, there is a leisurely one who knows they don't have to struggle. And the possibility of holding this intention gently and softly, and the world itself comes to meet us. No need to advance, to progress in your practice. No need to earn any title or rank. No need even to earn the approval of a teacher or anyone else. Just enough, each one of us, each one of you in this moment, whatever is here, just enough. And in the immediacy of our life, then these ideas of enough or not enough, of difficult or easy, are empty as well. You cannot judge your progress. You cannot judge your practice. If you think you're doing well, that's simply an idea you're having. If you think you're doing poorly, that's simply an idea. Through all this, there is the world itself, the brightness of the sun, the coolness of the breeze, the ache of the legs, whatever it is the world offers itself to you and to me. And this is the great possibility we have of meeting and being met, and then can't tell who is meeting whom, because there is no one left watching, no one keeping score. We just appreciate maybe some tears, maybe a smile, maybe just a little nod, just this. So Layman Pang was sitting in his thatched cottage one day, studying the sutras. "Difficult, difficult, difficult," he suddenly exclaimed, like trying to store 10 bushels of sesame seeds in the top of a tree. "Easy, easy, easy," his wife Layman Pang answered. "It's like touching your feet to the floor when you get out of bed." "Neither difficult nor easy," said their daughter Ling Zhao. "It's like the teachings of the ancestors shining on the 100 grass tips." Thank you. So please sit at ease. We'll now move into our Dharma dialogue. So invite you to come forth in this sharing, in the generosity of what is alive for you as you hear the words of Layman Pang and his wife and his daughter and Alan and me as you walk this path of Zen. So what's the observation or question or complaint that comes? So Ray.
In reflecting on Layman Pang's commentary about and the process of reading the sutras and then commenting about the sutras, it reminds me how often we have these ideas, you know, from what we read about how to live our lives, and it looks impossible, right? And incredibly difficult to actualize what we read or we think we should be doing or practicing. And so I really welcome his spouse's response to let go of this activity of needing to do things and that we're in charge, you know, that we're reforming ourselves or fixing ourselves to meet some criteria. That's not what it is. And it's the simplicity of just being. So that's what came up for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, Alan had said it wasn't really Dharma combat, which I think is but everyone expressing their own views in a Dharma dialogue. And in another way, it is definitely, I think I see it similarly to the way you're looking at it. She's really responding to his difficult with easy. And the lovely thing, of course, is then Ling Zhao comes in and says, "Hey, you guys," I mean, used to love this koan when we were the parents of a teenage girl who knew a lot about the Dharma, because she would often say things that just, you know, we would be on two different sides, right? And so individually, we want to put ourselves in all three of these places. Sometimes, as David was saying, it's really, really difficult. Life is really challenging, not just the sutras, but all our ideas, as you say, about what we're supposed to do. And then the other side, we also have to go there. It's not that difficult. It's very straightforward, you know, chopping wood, carrying water, as Layman Pang says in his poem, not such a big deal. But then this other big deal, to look out at the world and see on the grass tips all the ancestor teachings. It's a beautiful circle. If he was studying the sutras, then all you need to do is not look into the books, but look out and see how difficult, easy, not difficult, not easy. The world, as David said, is here to offer itself to us all the time. So I find myself going, sometimes I'm Le Min Pang, too difficult, this is too hard. Sometimes I'm his wife, this is so easy, what's the big deal? And other times, everything just is transcended with the tree outside the window, your face on the screen. Like, it's everything here, neither difficult nor easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I could add something to respond to Ray also, it's sometimes said of Chan Buddhism, right, of which gave rise to Zen in Japan, of sometimes said of Chan that its father is Indian Buddhism and its mother is Chinese Taoism. And it's kind of interesting that in this koan, the father is reading, you know, that some Mahayana sutra translated from Sanskrit, and finding it so difficult, because it really is. And then here's the mother expressing the Taoist side of it. You know, it's so natural. It's like putting your feet on the floor in the morning. So I don't think that is intentional in the koan, but I love the coincidence of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then the coming together in the daughter, right? It's not difficult. It's not easy. She could have said also, it is difficult and it's easy, right? Then this is the coming together of those two great forces of thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks. Craig.
Lay Woman Pong really spoke to me. It's as simple as putting your feet down, for lots of reasons. One is I relate more to her husband thinking things all the time, so the simplicity of this, and what, how utterly simple it is to put your feet down, and miraculous, the fact that I was born to have feet to put down, the fact that I can wake up in the morning and be alive. You know, this is ordinary thing and a wonderful thing. So even simple things are miraculous.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, Craig. Thank you. Debbie.
I heard Ray say like impossible, and sometimes that's what I feel like what I'm trying to do is, you know. I want transcendence, right? I don't want just a moment, right? But, and that's probably a big obstacle, right? Like today, like the dogs are playing, the crows are flying above them. And that's like, you know, for that fleeting second, you just like that picture, right? That's, and I was trying to think about like what I'm trying to do. And I was thinking of like, all right, what if I'm like a little finger on a hand or something? But I always try to compare myself with a thumb and the forefinger. And, you know, sometimes I'm the coolest one because I can fit in small spaces, right? Because I can't grip, you know? And so like that, like, I know that's like, you know, like, can I, like, if I could just know I'm like the tip of the body and it's like, well, it's all, like, it is all right. Like, it's all good. I don't know. I don't know anything really, but I just wanted to express.
Yeah. Well, Debbie, I appreciate you talking about this comparing mind. I love your image of the hand, right? I really love my little finger and would miss it terribly if I grew another thumb there, even though I appreciate my thumb too. But, you know, thinking of our function and who we are, the great way is easy for those who aren't attached to comparison, we might say. So just beginning to notice that the suffering that this comparison mind, you know, is just constantly complaining, you know, and we can find lots of, I should be able to do this. I should be able to run faster or jump higher. I should be able to get out of bed. I should be able to, we are lost in infinite comparison. And we long for something, and we hardly know what it is. But maybe what we long for is already here. Maybe the little finger already knows. Great.
Well, and you know, just to, one of the things I love about this story is that it does describe three very common mind states that you just beautifully named, Debbie. Sometimes it's really, really difficult. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just want to say what I think Alan and David and Ray were saying too, and Craig. It's when it's difficult, that's the Buddha Dharma manifesting as comparing and evaluating and putting ourselves down. That's the way. Sometimes the way just feels difficult. And sometimes it feels easy. And we do tend to prefer when it feels easy. We don't like to suffer, but the Buddha's teaching is that suffering is the condition of our existence. It's noble. It's the way things are. So sometimes things are difficult. Thank goodness. Then we get to work with those difficulties, learn about our minds, find out who we really are, come up with these beautiful metaphors. Little finger, thumb, you wouldn't be able to do that, right, if you didn't have some difficulty. And then, you know, Ling Zhao just saying, nope, neither one. Sometimes we feel like that, and the dogs are playing and the crows are flying. So how beautiful. All of it equally valid. And then our preferences get exposed.
Yeah. Thanks. Will.
Thanks very much, Alan and David, for the talk. Felt very much like a talk for me. And I guess I have two thoughts that kind of string together. One is just about sort of what Melissa was just talking about, is that, you know, there are times in life where you think, well, you know, this is my life and it has the problems that it has. And then there are, at least in my life, times which can go on for quite a long time where you think, no, yes, but, right? In other words, thanks for this, but I have a problem.
I have a problem. You don't understand, right? I
have a problem. Exactly. And I'm becoming aware of that, that mind that I would like to be right now. So, you know, I guess that's just sort of a statement of what I'm working with. But what I would like to try to connect it with, and I'm sort of groping at something here. I remember that I think it must be in the commentary to Mu, in Women's Commentary, that and maybe it's Aitken Roshi's comment on it, or is, he says there's a line about, you know, if you don't, whatever, you are a ghost clinging to bushes and grasses. And I remember Aitken saying, well, the bushes and grasses are a symbol that occurs all over Zen literature. And it's, you know, I don't know, the weeds, the thoughts, the something of this sort. So I guess I was imagining that it was the same grasses. And wondering, but what is it that shines on the grasses? The teachings of all the ancestors?
Yeah, teachings of the ancestors shining on the 100 grass tips.
So shining on the, no, I have a problem, right? Maybe?
Exactly.
I'm trying to get it. Thank you.
There's another translation of that line that I really like, which is that you can see the Buddhist teachings on the 100 grass tips. It's just it's a slightly different pointing, that everywhere you look, you get to see the teachings.
And you don't have to mow the lawn.
No, I think you do.
Okay.
It's not but, it's all and.
Yeah.
Okay. Melissa mentioned, Will, that the koan circles around back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And it does that in a funny way, because Layman Pong is reading the Dharma, right? He's reading some Mahayana Sutra. But the 100 grass tips are the dharmas, right? Mm-hmm. Little d dharmas. But are those different? Mm-hmm. Are some of the Chinese ancestors talk about the long, broad tongue of the Buddhist teaching, which we find in meadows and in and fields and mountaintops and grasses. So that's another way to think about it.
And even in the midst of our great delusion, even clinging, I had a student who said, you know, I'm doing nothing, but not in the good way. I'm just not doing, you know. So clinging to the grasses, clinging to our delusions is also the great way, mm-hmm. right? These grasses, if you really cling, you find this is life itself. So thank you. Chad.
Chad Cook.
Thank you for the talk. That was, rich to me in so many ways. But what occurred to me, especially hearing this aspect of clinging, right, is like this commonness of how I always try to characterize things, right, and how I classify things. And hearing like the, it's hard, it's easy, it's both. Like, I think of how, like, I always think of, like, everybody has their feelings, right? And no feelings are wrong. And that brought me back to this aspect of how easy it is, you know, just to get caught in the characterization. But in reality, it doesn't actually stop me from doing anything. I'm still, even if this is really hard, well, I'm still doing it. So it's sort of irrelevant. There's a characterization around it. So that was sort of, it was like a good reminder to see how easily I characterize and then just get stuck on that, right? Yeah. So thank you.
Not stuck to inside, outside, or in between.
Yeah, exactly. Great, thanks, Chad. Barry.
My thanks to everybody for their comments. As I was listening, the koan flipped on me. And I remembered my father with his Parkinson's disease towards the end, having no ability to put feet on the floor. And it was my mother who would move him in that direction. And her compassion was as beautiful as the grass tips. And her wisdom and caring was like a profound sutra. And the only reason I got there was listening to all of you in combination. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, we could say the 100 grass tips are each person who speaks, each person on the screen. You know, we provisionally say teacher and student, but any teacher who's not also a student is a dangerous person. And any student who does not know they are also a teacher is deluded. So we get to play all the roles, fill all the parts. Yeah, thanks. So last comment, Adam.
Thank you for the talk and for the discussion. I wanted to appreciate that the women are named in this story. You know, oftentimes they're the unnamed ancestors and, you know, you're left wondering, like, who is that woman selling these rice cakes? And it's just that this one does call them out by name. So I wanted to appreciate that. And going back to something you said earlier, Melissa, about what the daughter says and how she could have easily expressed it as and both. That was the thing that really came up for me, was that it is both of these things and not that it's not neither. And maybe I'm being a little bit like trying to complete a Nagarjuna proof or something here. You know, it's and both. But I went for a walk earlier and I was really enjoying the birds and the dogs outside. And I've been reading or listening to Dogen lately. And so I was thinking about, as I practice, I'm practicing with all ancestors throughout space and time. And that means that while it's easy for me to listen to the birds and the dogs right now, and at some other point in space and time, there has been immense suffering. And so it is both of these things simultaneously, that while I'm out enjoying my walk, somewhere someone's mother is helping someone's father put their feet on the floor. And it's both of these things. So I really appreciate you naming it being both instead of neither. So thank you for that.
Yeah, how beautifully said, and what a wonderful weaving together of what everybody's been talking about. All the time we're enjoying the sound of the birds. Somebody's dying in great pain. Somebody else is holding their hand and breathing with them. Somebody else is miserable because of something somebody said to them. It's just an amazing, amazing universe of suffering and delight intermingling all the time. The 100 grasses stand for everything, everything. The teaching's right in front of us.
So let's appreciate this vast intermingling with a few more breaths before we move into walking meditation.